Welcome to More Life, the Reentry Podcast, where we explore the transformative journey of reentry after incarceration. I'm your host, Venkivia Garner. Each week, we bring you powerful interviews with experts in the field and the voices of those who have lived through the experience. Our mission is to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and personal stories by shedding light on the challenges and triumphs faced by formerly incarcerated individuals. We explore the latest research, policies, and practices while also hearing firsthand accounts from those who've been impacted. Join us as we uncover the realities of reentry, challenge misconceptions, and inspire hope. Whether you're a professional working in the legal system, a family member, an advocate, or someone navigating reentry yourself, More Life the Reentry Podcast is here to inform, inspire, and ignite change. All right. Welcome back to another episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast. We are so grateful to be here today. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about civic education. And civic education is a significant barrier for people who are system impacted, leaving the system when it comes to talking about voting rights or civic participation. Many people, when they return to their communities, they don't have a lot of clear information about voting rights. There may be some confusion depending on what state they live in and the laws that govern disenfranchisement and re-enfranchisement. And so without that proper civic education, many people are just unaware of their eligibility to vote or what they can do to get involved. They may be fearful of legal repercussions if they attempt to vote or just struggle with the understanding the process of voting itself. So for today's episode, we're really going to be talking about civic education, how we can better educate people on their civic rights, what information they do need, and kind of providing people with more accurate information about voting rights. Maybe even some of the legal processes involved, and just the importance of educating our community and empowering people to participate in the democratic process, especially those who have gone behind the walls and are coming back to their communities or just are system impacted in general. So to have this conversation today, we have three great individuals with us, Mr. Toussaint Daniels, Mr. Darian Benson, and Ms. Freddie. I forgot to ask you how to say your last name. Do you want to tell us how to say your last name?
Yes, it's Darozier.
Yes, thank you. They're going to be with us to talk to us about this today. They are all with Chicago Votes. So I will let them share a little bit about themselves and we will jump right into our conversation. So if we want to start with Mr. Daniels, can you tell us just a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Hello, my name is Toussaint Daniels. I'm part of Chicago Votes 2024 Democracy Corps fellow. I've formerly incarcerated. You know, I've did 25 years incarcerated, and while I was incarcerated, I became a civic educator through Chicago Votes. I'm not literally free. I'm currently in a transition center, you know, in North Lawndale, so I'm free-ish. But like, man, I love doing work. I love engaging with the community. I love empowering them with information. So therefore, that's me in a nutshell.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Daniels. Mr. Darian, you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and what work you do?
My answer is similar to Toussaint's, except that I spent 15 years incarcerated. I'm also a certified civics peer educator. But to add, if I'm going to add information to that, it's personally as an individual, like I try to use my art to connect and engage with the community. I'm a poet, I'm a writer and a playwright, and I'm learning how that works and fits into this space, because during my incarceration, I use it to cope with it. So now I want to use it to reach others and teach people about those experiences and, you know, and just educate the society we re-enter into. Like, you know, we human too. And we want this opportunity to say something about this system that's dictating our pace. So yeah, that's me.
Well, look, I'm glad to have you both here. Miss Freddie, do you want to tell us a little bit about the work that you do and who you are?
Of course. I just want to say thank you so much for having us here. My name is Frederic Derozier. You can call me Freddie. I'm a first-gen Haitian-American. I'm an organizer. I'm currently the policy manager at Chicago Votes, which just to introduce a little bit more about Chicago Votes, we are a non-profit, nonpartisan organization working to build a more inclusive democracy through expanding voter access, empowering young Chicagoans, and reforming laws. And some of our main goals look at increasing access, transparency, and representation in our democratic system, working to dismantle oppressive systems, while also empowering young people to have ownership of the systems that kind of, you know, run our lives. Some of the main aspects of my work has been around our voting in prison legislation, which is legislation that we are trying to pass in Illinois to restore voting rights to people who are incarcerated in our prisons. And there's only a few, I think Maine and Vermont, Puerto Rico, and Washington, D.C. are the only states that allow currently incarcerated people to vote. And so we're trying to change that in Illinois and kind of lead the country to get more of those things happening. I guess that's a little bit about me.
All right. Well, look, thank you. Great introductions. And I'm really just glad you all are here and for us to have this conversation today. So I guess to start us off, I was wondering with either of you, whoever wants to explain some of the key steps that system impacted or formerly incarcerated individuals need to follow to kind of check their voter eligibility in Illinois, and what are some things they should look for in other states as well?
First, that, you know, unlike other states, when it relates to felony disenfranchisement, even on parole, you know, as soon as you leave from being incarcerated, you have the ability to vote. So in doing this work, a lot of people I communicate with, those who are inside the institution and those who just newly released, they ain't even informed that, yeah, they had a right to vote as soon as they get home. So the information is key. Information that you have the ability to use your voice, you know, is to inform you, is to arm you in order to make usher a change. So that's the very first step, is telling them, like, yeah, you have the right to vote as soon as you are released. Be it you on parole or anything, as soon as you're released, you have the right to vote.
That's specific to Illinois, though. It's, some states don't allow you to do that, though. Like, they define the completion of your sentence as paying back court fines. So, yeah. I mean, Illinois, that's special to Illinois, though, right?
Yeah, it's special to Illinois. And I was talking in the context of being from Illinois, you know, but, you know, like, that in itself, like Darian just ushered, if you are in a different state, understand if you do have some felony disenfranchisement rules that might prohibit you from taking advantage of your vote. And I believe it's only three states that now have a partially disenfranchisement. Kentucky, Florida, and all those things are hinged around whether or not you have the ability to pay your fines or depending on what type of crime you are convicted of. But if you are those particular states, man, it's incumbent upon you to just ask those questions so you can get some understanding how to plug back into the system.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Toussaint and Darian. I think that, well, if you can vote with a felony conviction, like you said, you know, varies from state to state. And because of that, because it's so patchwork, every state is different on their laws. In some states, you can't vote if you're currently serving a sentence, which is the case in most states. In some states, you can vote as long as you're not serving a sentence. In some states, you have to pay off fines and fees, as Darian said. And then in some states, you have to be off parole or probation. So that leads to a lot of confusion to people about whether or not they can vote whenever they're released, because, you know, it's so different from each state. And so that can lead to a lot of different confusion. And so one of the things that we wanted to do in Illinois to make sure that folks who were returning knew about their voting rights was implement a civics course for folks who are coming out of Illinois Department of Corrections. And so that legislation, the civics and prison legislation, was passed in 2019, that basically created a peer-taught civics course. So basically folks inside would teach other folks inside about their voting rights, about voting rights history, like the struggle to get voting rights. And then also, you know, letting them know that you have the right to vote whenever you get out. And so those courses used to be only available. Well, they still are, I guess, right now for folks who are going to be released. And Tucson and Darian can also speak to this more because they were peer educators who taught the civics courses while they were inside. And so we can talk a little bit more about how we want to shift that. But I also want to give Darian and Tucson an opportunity to talk about, you know, what it was like for them to teach those courses. And
yeah, I'd love to also hear some of that, because I think I'm from Arkansas, and there you have to be off of parole or completed your sentence, parole, probation, in order for you to be able to vote. So it is really confusing across state to state, and it's really important that people know those disenfranchisement and reenfranchisement laws. However, they also can just be very hard to understand itself. So I'd love to hear what you all's experience was like in teaching those courses, and what were some of the topics that you all covered? I hear you've talked about the history of voting rights, how challenging it's been, and just what the laws are specific to Illinois. So I just love to hear a little bit more of y'all's experience.
So one specific thing that we covered in these courses was governmental response, and we talked about the government being the power and wanting to hoard power, and that the people having the power to give, we have power to put people in place, and that's how they get their power. But all the laws and all the confusion that's surrounded by it is their way of holding on to it. So we talk about how it began, what was the restrictions of people who could access this power and could vote. You had to be 21, you had to be Christian, you had to be a property owner. We kind of like went into why did you think this was possible, or why did you think they did it this way to cut others out of the power? And then we go through like this timeline in the packet to further show examples of when people stood up and came together, the government found ways to the bottom. We talk about felony disenfranchisement as one of those ways to divide the people and keep power, government power. In the classes, when teaching that, you kind of see like a light bulb going off. Like people like, wait, hold on. They tricking me? Like, you know, and it, like those moments was dope for me, because first and foremost, I'm a student at this. Like, I didn't even know I could vote. So doing this course and being certified as a peer educator, I was informed like, oh, wait, just because I'm convicted doesn't mean I'm completely X'd out. Like, you know what I mean? So that was an empowering experience for me. And it was empowering to see other people regain, you know, their confidence and knowing like, oh, I can go out and do something if I want to, because it's still a choice at the end of the day. But yeah, that was my experience.
I really just got pleasure in not only gathering the information, but giving the information back onto the people, you know, like something as simple as what's the differentiation in the party's platform that people didn't know. You know, something as simple about these municipals, how these things impact your daily life to life. Taxation, how these things impact your daily life to life. It's all this information that we gave to them through Chicago Votes and in those moments to have that class be interactive. You know, because I was familiar with the term of civic death, you know, before this, but it got more enriched in going through these processes and how we selectively check out. And how this impact our community because we selectively check out, you know? So mm-hmm. like I just got to echo the response from Darian and to add a little bit more context to that.
Yeah, I can add a little bit more about like just what's in the curriculum. So the main goals of the curriculum are to inform individuals about their eligibility as part of their release, and ways that voting can be a key aspect to successful reentry. And the law is structured around three workshops that cover a specific topic. So the first one is just basic information on why voting matters, especially for formerly incarcerated people in their communities. Basic information on elections, forms of government, various elected positions, and then just basic instructions on how to register to vote and how to fill out a sample ballot.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of domains that are covered. I definitely heard from Mr. Darian kind of debunking some of the common misconceptions that we hear about that people with a felony conviction cannot vote at all. There's some of that in there. There's some practical things that Ms. Freddie is talking about as well. And then you, Mr. Daniels, is really understanding how the system works and all the different agents that play a role in the system and making sure we have an understanding of that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I often tell them their blueprint provided like a conduit. You know, like I got all this information kind of coming at me, but it got me a prime focus. Okay, this is how this exists. You know, this is the government response from the Bacon's Rebellion, what led to the black holes, what eventually birthed the Jim Crow. These are the government response with Fred Hampton Rainbow Coalition, and we're gonna bring in the war on drugs. You know, this it just ran context to all the information that you kind of take into the years, and it makes it kind of clear about how you can impact your now. You know, not just you, but us all collectively. Like I often say in meeting with them, like if you inform the people, you arm the people. And then in that level of being armed, understanding that we work best to connect it. You know, it's one of the inflection moments in my particular life, going through this process, being a peer educator, that I not only found like I found purpose, but I was able to breathe life in others to understand how they need to be plugged in or, you know, just be the water to hopefully you can aid them as they go forth, you know, into society.
Yeah, I will say exactly what Toussaint said. I think like when you look at all the timeline of voting rights and you see all the organized ways that people try to suppress voting, it puts, you know, in your mind, like, this is actually a powerful tool, because if it wasn't there, why would they, one, strip us of this right while we're incarcerated? And two, you know, why would they try to stop all these different groups from accessing the ballot if it wasn't a powerful, you know, mechanism?
Yeah, I know that's a question that I have, you know, as I've been doing my learning and understanding the history of disenfranchisement of voting rights, that's a question that I've always had with me is, you know, why take away the right to vote from someone if it doesn't mean anything? But it means a lot because that's why we're doing it. So I thank you both for emphasizing that point there. I do want to ask, are there any other misconceptions that you all may target with your curriculum when it comes to voting rights, and how do we debunk some of these other myths that we may have?
Well, I know going, like, literally, like, I read everyone's, people sometimes don't even know where their agenda lies, because they don't understand the party's platform, you know? And in a nonpartisan way, explaining to you both of the party platforms, so therefore you can see what your agenda that works best for you. You know, like that was something, like, it was just amazing. Like, we want this candidate because this candidate makes sure we get money, or we don't want that candidate because that candidate makes sure we don't get money. But when you really shows, you know, the platforms, but both of these particular parties, and when I'm talking about parties, I'm talking about the primary parties, you know, the Republican and Democrat. And we even give you information about those who are independent, about the Green Party, all those things to see where your allegiance align and that really fits your political understanding. So, like, yeah, that was refreshing. Just debunking those things, you know.
Yeah, because I know that that's often a challenge. I've heard from many people, system impacted, in general, people who don't have felony convictions either, of they don't really understand how to research candidates. They don't really understand how to research the issues amongst the different parties, and so they don't vote because they don't understand or they don't resonate with a certain party or a certain individual. So it's interesting to see how y'all are incorporating that into your curriculum as well.
The local election, you know, when every 4 years, these general elections start, but we don't understand it like the municipal, how it impacts our lives on the day to day. I remember me telling, I was asking somebody, do they know who the alderman was? And then do they know some of the powers in which the alderman has? And once I started to inform them, they wasn't aware of a lot of things. So like, yeah, that's why is also debunking the thought that everybody as it relates to the general election, the presidency, but not really focusing on the municipal, the things that affect our day-to-day lives, man. Like, it was really enriching.
Yeah, I think that is one of the really important ones that people don't realize. And also, like, one of the parts of the curriculum, one thing I will say about this curriculum is this should probably, like, be in every high school. Like, this should be available. Like, this should be something that everybody knows. It's, you know, just basic, you know, where do our tax money go? You know, there's, like, a part of the curriculum that shows, like, just a breakdown of federal taxes, Illinois state taxes. There's another part that we go over. The poll taxes from back in the day when they were trying to take voting rights away from Black people, like the grandfather clauses, the crazy tests they would make you take that nobody can pass. You know, these are you know, right now felony disenfranchisement is just kind of an extension of those barriers. And I think that a lot of times when we talk to like lawmakers and other people, because felony disenfranchisement affects everyone who is who has a felony conviction. Sometimes people will say, "Well, this is a colorblind issue," but we know that felony disenfranchisement was created a lot. We saw a lot of it existed, you know, back in Greek times, but we see an expansion of these laws in the late 1800s and 1870s after Black people are granted citizenship and thus the right to vote. Right. So we know that this is by design. We know that 55% of people who are incarcerated are Black. We know that they in Illinois, and I'm sure those numbers probably are reflected in a national standpoint when, you know, Black people only make up about like 14-19%. So even if these laws were supposed to be, quote unquote, colorblind, if the impact is that it's disproportionately affecting Black and brown people, then that's the conversation that we need to have. I think that a lot of people aren't ready for that.
I would agree with you on that. I don't think they're particularly ready for that conversation yet. but it's a needed conversation. It's a conversation we need to be having, whether they're ready or not. Well, I do appreciate that. So I do want to ask you all, because I do hear that there's this broader emphasis on, it's not just about voting. It's about being civically engaged in general and civic education overall. So my question for each one of you is, what does civic education mean for system impacted individuals, and why is it important to go beyond just voting?
Well, for me, civic engagement is like finding a way to connect with all of these people in my community. Like, so voting, you know, is one way to come together and get things done for the better of a community and the progression of that community. But just outside of that, I'm just looking for a way to be in community with people. And I feel like, you know, going through my incarceration and, you know, I found a community in there, but it was under like harsh conditions. Like, we in that trauma bonding, basically, you know what I mean? And out here, it's difficult because it's residue from that experience. So how people think and how they move out here is like, wow. And then it's extra pressure of, oh, being an incarcerated individual. How do I move? How do I think? And I think a lot of that is due to me feeling the pressure from the laws that exist. I feel like the culture has, it views me with a slant. So not only am I awkward because I don't have the things I should have had during my incarceration, I feel this pressure from the rules that has been made about who I am. So engaging the community, like getting them to vote, getting them to see, you know, me as a person, or, you know, my peers as people, you know, that's what engaging the community and civic engagement is to me, teaching them that, like, look, they, you know, people who want to hoard power are, like, they dividing us and they making us seem like we ain't in this together, but we are. And this is a conduit in which I kind of show that, like, this is the playing field.
Like, just echo those sentiments. Like, I am part of a body, you know, a body of people. When you civically engage, man, you inject yourself into being a part of that body, of that living experience. You got to think, I'm going a quarter of a century. So in that time, I was told where I sleep. I was told what I eat, when to eat, is because I was disconnected. So, and not only that, statistically, it shows that recidivism drops, that you are least likely to recidivize once you become civically engaged, because you just know your plan, your purpose as it relates to your particular community. Like, we have been impacted systematically because we chose not to buy in. You know, like there's a reason why since the 1970s, Illinois in itself has went from 7 prisons to 27 prisons. And primarily those prisons in areas that doesn't look like me. You know, but yet and still the minorities as it relates to blacks are 54% of IDOC. And like, and it's incumbent upon us for our future, you know, to be engaged, because it has an impact, you know, it has an impact that continue. In order to kill this curse, we have to get involved. So yeah, it's vote or die. You know what I'm saying? like my bad, but even beyond that, and to know the people who represent you so you can hold them accountable.
Ms. Reddy, is there anything you want to add about civic education and why it's important to go beyond just voting?
Yeah, I will say, you know, and I'm sure Darion and Toussaint can speak to this as well. Like, as we talk to young people coming up to this election, a lot of people are very disillusioned with how powerful their vote is. And what I will say is that voting is one, you know, means to an end, but like voting is not going to be the thing that liberates us. I think it was James Baldwin that had a quote that said something like, voting is a way for the Negro to be able to like basically buy ourselves time. And so I think that voting is one tool that we should absolutely use. But yeah, like you said, there are so many other pathways of civic engagement that can have more of a direct impact on the people in your community. I would say like organizing, mutual aid campaigns. Like there is somebody in your community, wherever you are, that is doing some sort of work. Like we don't have to recreate the wheel. We can just plug in and use our gifts and our talents to support those things. I think like showing up to city council meetings, showing up to where your lawmakers are meeting. A lot of times, like, they do the things that they do because they think that nobody's paying attention or nobody's watching. So just even showing them, like, we are watching, we are paying attention. You know, if we're not invited in the room, if we don't have a seat at the table, then we'll pull up our own, you know, type thing. And I think that in addition to voting, you know, we're going to have to be more creative about how do we engage with each other in our communities. Because like you said, it's a powerful tool, but it's not going to be the only tool that we use to build our new house.
Voting is it's important, and our vote definitely holds power. And I like that quote that you provided us there. But there is more that we have to do. We have to be involved in the organizations that are in our community, show up to those city council meetings, be an active participant for the things that we want to change in our communities and our societies. So thank y'all for sharing a little bit more on that. One of the things that I've learned throughout this entire process too, of just learning about voting rights, of just how important it is for people who are impacted by the system to help in leading this movement towards re-enfranchisement and ending felony disenfranchisement. Do you care to talk to us a little bit more about the role of formerly incarcerated, system impacted, and why it's very important for them to show up in these spaces as well to lead this movement?
Well, personally, I take on the role of being a beacon You know, 25 years is a long time. And I want to speak to the younger version of myself that's going through this process to always be that light at the end of the tunnel. You know, like, I truly believe I represent, if you do this time properly, then you can make a system change. And even beyond it. Because the true thing is to destroy the system. You know, to do is to eradicate, you know, all these prisons, is to create another pathway for other people. So it's incumbent upon us to show that, like, even to the lawmakers, that, like, yo, these are the humans. This is the substance that still lies within those walls. And, man, we got to think of a better way, you know, than just regulating them to some foreign land and taking all this time for them. So ultimately, the end goal is I got to be representative of those who are in the system, and I also got to be representative of those in order so they can not come to the system, period. You know, so that's what I take on.
I think more so like the faith, like we ain't got no, it don't be like no faith or no belief that we can be more or that our voices really count. And the proof for me is, ain't nobody gonna silence you if what you say ain't important. Nobody ain't disenfranchising you for no reason. You know what I mean? And I think once, because every time we, you know, we start peeling back layers and showing people like, yo, look, this is why this is this, and this is why this is that. And when I'm learning more, like, nah, for real, I become more like, I want to get into it. So we just got to find ways to relate that information and meet people where they at and just let them know your story matter. And you got to get out here and tell that story, because if you're not telling it, if I'm not telling it, who going to tell it? We can't let other people be in charge of our narratives. We got to get out here and share that.
I think that when we look at a lot of the policy work, when we think about even like nonprofit and a lot of the lobbying and stuff, I think that a lot of these things come out of like well-intentioned organizers. But oftentimes, you know, the people with the most directly impacted and the people who have the most experience are sometimes left out of the conversations, or people make decisions for them. And I think that is something that we like try to like be aware of. I think I'm a quote person, so here's another quote. I think it's Australian Aboriginal like quote. It goes like, if you have come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you have come because you realize that your liberation is bound with mine, then let's work together. You know, I think that sometimes people come in with the mindset, oh, I'm going to help, I'm going to do these things. And sometimes I think people don't realize that they're taking up a little bit too much space. And so that's something that I think organizers need to be more conscientious of. And one of the things that I think about a lot is like, why wouldn't we want to have the perspectives of the people who have experienced like the most direct impact of these things, like in the discussion, right? And I think that's also when we talk about like what's going on in our prisons right now. A lot of times people who are, you know, who end up in prison are there because of failures of the system, right? So who better than them to know like what needs to be done to fix it? And I think like a lot of times policy people and legislators will have all these things that they think will work, but they haven't actually talked to anybody who has experience with it. And so I think that's why sometimes we get these like half-baked solutions that don't really, you know, take into consideration like the human part. And so I think that a lot of organizations, even Chicago Votes, can lean into how do we lift up the voices of folks and not be like take up all the space in the room, right? How do we make sure that we are centering the folks with this experience? And so when you ask this question, I think that's kind of, you know, what came to mind when we talk about like, why is it important to keep directly impacted voices, you know, relevant and important? Because I mean, why else are we doing it, you know?
Yeah. And I think what I was going to say earlier too, is kind of what Mr. Darian was saying here is, take control of the narrative and let those with the lived experience share their stories and provide based on their experiences what we need to do, because they know where the gaps are. They know because of their experiences. But we tend to take this top-down approach and not include the people who are impacted. So I do appreciate y'all sharing a little bit more about that. I do want to ask y'all, what are some, for those of our individuals that are system impacted that may be voting for the first time or returning to vote after a long time, what are some practical tips that you would offer to them?
That Brady just showed us. I mean, you could go to liga.gov, look up, type in your address. You can find senators, Senate, your Senate representatives. You can find federal level, government level. You can look at the bills that they sponsored, got passed, and really like inform yourself on those things. It's like a summary version of it. If you really want to get into it, it's like the long version of it. I don't know if my attention span long enough to read like a whole bill thing, but that's on there. That's one of the tools that I've been recently taught.
Look for your community to get civically involved. Like, yeah, Chicago Votes, we here. We out here. You know what I'm saying? So, like, but, like, man, like, look for a home to share your dislikes, to share, you know, to not necessarily dislike, to share in order to gather some level of understanding. So, like, yeah, look for you a civic home to try to engage with others. That's what
I would say, like, don't feel intimidated by the process. I think that for folks who are returning, they may feel like, oh, there's so much that they don't know. And I'll say, like, most people don't know. So, just give yourself that grace. Connect with folks. Like, there are people or are organizations that have resources to share, because voting is kind of like, I remember the first time I voted, I'm looking at all these names. I'm like, I don't even know who these people are. I don't know what they do. And so I think that figuring out who those people are, like, there are resources like Chicago Votes makes a voter guide. Wherever you are locally, the website Darian was talking about, ilga.gov, has a ton of, you know, great information about legislation. So you can see, like, who the people you are voting for, like, what kind of bills have they supported in the past, to give you kind of a sense of, you know, if you would want to reelect them. There's also websites, Ballot Ready or Ballotpedia are also two great resources. For Ballot Ready, you can literally just, like, put in your address, and it'll just give you a sample ballot of everything that's going to be on your ballot. And then you can, like, kind of fill it out in advance, and you can, like, print it out or screenshot it, and you can take that with you when you go vote. And then Ballotpedia is kind of just like a Wikipedia, though, but for just, like, anything that's going to be on the ballot. So it'll break down, like, who the people are that are running, like, where their district is, what the role is that they do, like, who they're running against. And so, like, those websites have been super helpful for me whenever I go to vote. And it's a lot of information, so I won't lie. It still can be kind of intimidating, but I think I would just say, like, most people are in the same boat with not knowing. And so just give yourself that grace and just do your best, you know?
Yeah, I really appreciate you for normalizing that we it's a lot of information, and a lot of us are trying to figure it out. So they can be very intimidating, but finding you a civic home, support to help you understand, and getting involved in those ways can better your understanding, and using the resources and tools that they have provided here. I'll make sure I put them in the description box so people can access them if they'd like to use those tools. Seems like they will be helpful. I need to look at some of them. So I thank y'all. Kind of moving us a little bit further up. I know some of the work that you all, Chicago Votes, has done. Ms. Freddie, you mentioned this at first. A lot of the work has been in the jails and educating people. How can we expand this education to communities for people who are system impacted and already living in their communities? How do you encourage organizers or even people like me that are running podcasts to be able to reach these people and provide them with the knowledge that y'all are doing behind those bars?
Well, I guess I can't really speak to, like, how do you would get the information behind bars, because that's not my lived experience. But I will say that, like, there are organizations that will try to, like, you know, send things in, like, newsletters, And I think that maybe, you know, there are, I think maybe probably Darion and Toussaint could probably answer this better, but it was like an awkward silence. So I felt like I should jump in.
No, you're good. Yeah. It's just trying to expand it to, you know, people who may be in the community and how do we better inform them of even these processes and getting them to get that spark of involvement.
It's so crazy because, like, you know, when you come from these communities, there's, you know, scarcity, and they care about is things within the moment. And when I was civically engaged with my family, I was like, man, y'all don't know this, y'all don't know that. And back to Frederica, when she said no judgment, you know, like it's hard for me to answer that because a lot of the information that I got was through organizations, through Chicago Vote, through reading this, through reading that, and it wasn't really coming from the outside. And so I'm like, even now I'm free-ish. So to respond to that, like I was waiting for, like, yeah, so teach me. I think all this is a learning process. And the mere fact that we have in this level of discussion, it inspired us to think of more effective ways to kind of engage with those who are currently still incarcerated, who are assisted impact in order to illuminate, you know, issues.
Something that came up for me was while Toussaint was talking was like just meeting people where they are. I think that, you know, we can have all the information we want to share, but if we're not going to where people are, we can't just expect people to come to us. So I think like part of the Democracy Corps program that I was a part of, and now Darion and Toussaint are a part of, you know, we just went places, we went to community events, we were getting on the train. We were just, you know, this summer we went to Lollapalooza, different music festivals, and just being like, okay, this is where young people are. This is, you know, where the community is going to be because this is a community event. And so just making sure like we have resources to register people, to share, you know, we do commitment cards. I think just like getting out in the field is really the best way. Like we can't just like, you know, gatekeep information and hope that people come to us. If we want people to know, like we got to go out there.
Okay. Thank you. Well, let me ask this then. So I know you've talked a little bit about what Chicago Votes has done. Can you tell us a little bit more about what Chicago Votes does? And generally, I know they do work outside of just in the jail, but just voting rights in general. Do you care to share us a little bit about that? And then what successes you've seen from this work?
Yeah, I could take this one. And feel free to jump in at any time. We do a few different like programs. One of our programs is called Give a Shit, which is basically kind of like our blending of culture and politics, because we do know that, you know, politics is not like fun or sexy for most people. It's actually kind of boring. And if you ever like looked at a picture of most of the people in the legislature, you might get a sense of why, you know, if you don't see yourself in like in these people, then you might not be interested, you know? And so our Give a Shit program is like how we blend culture and politics to and art, you know, to make people engage. So like maybe we have an event and you might not come, you know, to like learn about, you know, politics, but you might come because like a cool artist that you like is going to be there and going to be sharing their work or performing. And so we kind of try to get people in that way. We have our Unlock Civics program, which is kind of like the intersection of civics and our carceral systems. So we, in 2019 passed, but since 2017, though, Chicago Votes has gone into the Cook County Jail. We know that people who are pretrial, who haven't been convicted, still have their right to vote, but oftentimes don't exercise that right because there's not accessibility. And so folks were going into the Cook County Jail, registering people to vote. In 2019, that's when Senate Bill 2090 passed, which made Cook County Jail the first jail in the country to become a polling place. So basically, folks who are in there can vote inside of the jail. So that happened in the 2020 primary elections was the first time that happened. And then we talked about our civics in prison legislation that happened in 2019. And then we have judicial accountability work that we do where we do like court watching where basically we send volunteers to go watch court as it happens, the Cook County Criminal Court, and to watch judges and collect data on bias and misconduct, and just like, okay, do we notice that they are taking more time on cases when the people look this way versus if they look that way? Are they, you know, misgendering people, data like that? So that data is supposed to be used to create our judicial voter guide. And that kind of leads into some of the other work we do. We create a voter guide every election, primary and general, that kind of just gives people like, this is what you need to vote. This is what you don't need to vote. Like, if they say that you need this, then, you know, this is a number that you can call, because that's voter suppression. We will cover, we'll send out questionnaires to candidates so people can look at the voter guide and kind of see which candidate aligns with them. And another part of our Unlock Civics program is our voting in prison legislation. And so I talked about that a little bit earlier, but basically we are trying to push legislation that would restore voting rights to people who are currently incarcerated. And so that process has been going on for quite some time now. We started, I think, in 2020, and we basically have been doing advocacy, meeting with lawmakers, talking about this, having like advocacy days, power hours. Like, we do trips to our Capitol in Springfield. We have bi-weekly coalition of organizations, national organizations, and organizations based in Chicago and in Illinois, to, you know, basically talk about how we are going to get rid of felony disenfranchisement in our state. And so we've been pushing this legislation for a while now, as I mentioned, and you know, despite our efforts and the efforts of everyone in the coalition, we haven't been able to get the bill passed. But with that said, we've looked, taken time to reflect on our campaign and have important conversations with our coalition members and folks who are in the prison right now and folks who are out and directly impacted folks. And so we're taking all of these things and crafting a new campaign, which we launched last year, which is the RACE Act, which is the Reintegration and Civic Empowerment Act, which moves those civics courses that we talked about, makes them available to everyone in the Illinois Department of Corrections, not just people who are about to get out, and then also restores their voting rights. And so this work that we've been doing, you know, you'd be surprised how many legislators aren't ready to, you know, they say that like the Democratic Party is the party of voting rights. But when it comes to people who are in prison, it seems like that's not really what they mean. We know that people in prison in Illinois are the last remaining group of disenfranchised citizens, and our Illinois legislature has the power to clarify that language and restore the right to vote. And so they just need to do that. And I think we're in a time right now where people, you know, there's like a kind of like a tough on crime wave happening right now. And so people are, especially lawmakers, are kind of reluctant to have the conversations around restoring voting rights, which I think is kind of crazy, because we know that people who are connected to their community are less likely to harm their community. We know that when a lot of times, especially in Chicago, people who are incarcerated are mostly from Cook County and Chicagoland area, and they're getting shipped to Southern Illinois and parts all over Illinois that they don't have connections to. And so like, what does that do to that voting block, right? Like, it's taking voting rights away from communities that are primarily Black and Brown. And so, you know, we're continuing to push this legislation. We're going to have a day of advocacy in Springfield, November 13th. So if folks are listening and are interested and want to join this legislative fight, they can definitely do that. And hopefully we're going to try and pass this legislation before the end of this session, because we know that once the new people are elected in November, they'll get inaugurated in January. So we want to try to do that before then. But that's just a little bit of what we do.
Yeah, there's a whole host of things that are going on, and those sound amazing. Even just the idea of expanding, regardless of incarceration status, you should have a right to vote. So I really do hope that that comes to fruition. And I'll put the day of advocacy That was perfect. I'll put the Day of Advocacy in the description box so people can know, like, if they want to attend, they'll be able to. But thank you. I do want to ask, is there anything that from each of you, question for all of you, we're coming to the end of our conversation here. What do you want our audience members to leave with from this conversation?
Community is important. I guess, you know, tapping into civics is like, it's like loving your community. Find the value in where you stay, where you live, and the people around you. And that's why this stuff is important to me.
I basically just like to echo the same sentiment, you know, that Darion just hit, you know. You matter. Your vote matter. You know, and when you use it, and when you use your voice in general, when you understanding like all these things that impacts you, and it impact, like I often talk about the future, it impacts our future. But you know, if you tap in, man, you have a sense of community, and therefore you want to lift up your community. So, you know, continue to learn and do so.
Definitely. I would just say, back at it with the quote. One of my favorite poets, June Jordan, she has a quote where she says that the health and legitimacy of any governing force should be evaluated by the experience of the people who are like the most powerless in our society. And we know that that looks like children, Black people, people who are incarcerated, you know, people who are kind of locked out of the American dream. And she challenges us to do whatever we can to, you know, change what we can accept. And as a result, like, we can change our destiny. And so I think, like, I would just encourage everybody to know that, like, there is a role for you in this movement. Whatever your gifts, whatever your talents are, voting is, like, one way you can use your power. But all of us have so much power in us that we don't have to just accept the status quo. Like, we can... you know, sometimes people say like that'll never happen. Things will never change. That's what they said about slavery. They said, you know, the South has built their economy and this has been going on for 400 years. Okay. And we could still come together. We could still organize. We don't have to passively accept what we know in our heart isn't right. And so I would just encourage folks to, you know, like they said, find community, find organizations, play your part. Everyone has something to contribute. And, you know, we would love to get whatever your contribution is.
Absolutely. And I'll add to that, just kind of summarization is that this kind of inadequate access to civic education really leaves those who are system impacted, disconnected from the democratic process, just further marginalizing them and just diminishing their overall civic engagement. And these type of barriers really underscore the importance of targeted educational resources and outreach. So it's really important that we all work together to restore voting rights and empower those who have been impacted by the system to be participants in our democracy. So I'm very appreciative of everybody that has been on here today. And the last thing I want to do is, because I know there were a couple things that Mr. Toussaint wanted to talk about regarding the Chicago and Mud Theater project. So I want to make sure we have a little bit of that discussion in our audience for those who may be in Chicago or just interested in being involved, know what that project is.
I really just want to not only highlight Chicago Votes once again, because I truly feel like, you know, that is that sense of community that get me civically engaged. However, me becoming a civic peer educator inside in an institution, it kind of inspired me. Even though I was already a writer, it kind of inspired me to write stories that impact my community. And while in prison, me along with Darion, we started a theater group. And now we're on the outside, we're starting up that theater group once again, along with all five key members that started at prison called the Mud Theater Project. I just want to get a shout out to my Mud brothers and because through y'all, I've matured and y'all have led me to the space where I can communicate and be a part of Chicago Votes. So that's look for us. We on the way. Mud Theater in the building.
Mr. Darion, I know that, I think you mentioned on your form that you're also involved in this project as well.
Yes, I am. I'm a writer, a performer, a spoken word, artists. Yes, Mud Theater is in the building.
Well, look, well, just know they are in the building and they are looking for y'all and they are coming up. So I'm definitely going to look more into you all's project as well. I'd love to just see what's happening there. So thank you for sharing and highlighting with us. Go ahead.
Again, it's mudtheaterproject.org. That's the actual website. Check it out. You know, it's mudtheaterproject.org. My IG at mudtheaterproject, our Instagram page, man. We out here.
All right. It'll be in the description box, y'all. So just know you'll be able to see it. So thank y'all for coming on. And this is More Life, the Reentry Podcast, signing off. Thank you for joining us on this episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast. We hope today's conversation has provided valuable insights and inspiration for your own journey or the work you're doing to support reentry. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and continue to bring you powerful stories and expert opinions. For more resources, updates, and to connect with our community, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at More Life The Reentry Podcast. If you have any questions, suggestions, or would like to share your own story, feel free to reach out to us at the email provided in the description box. Remember, reentry is a journey, and together we can make a difference. Until next time, stay inspired, stay informed, and keep moving forward. This is More Life, the Reentry Podcast, signing off. The content shared on More Life, the Reentry Podcast, is for informational and educational purposes only. The views expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the podcast. While we strive for accuracy, content may be based on research, personal experiences, or opinions. Research is subject to change as new data emerges, and content may also vary from person to person. This podcast does not provide professional advice or recommendations. Listeners should consult with appropriate professionals for guidance. Please note that some discussions may also have sensitive topics, therefore, listener discretion is advised. This episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast is funded by the Paul Simon Democracy Award. We thank you for supporting our mission to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and lived experiences.